if there's anybody in here, just look out!
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And we are doing something a little bit different this time, because normally we talk about books and movies. This time we're going to do something different because we're recording live at the 82nd Worldcon in Glasgow, Scotland. All right. Well, checks in the mail to everyone who applauded. I appreciate it. We have some folks here that we know and invited. We invited basically anyone who wanted to come.
What are we doing today, Seth? What are we going to talk about today?
Well, we are going to do sort of a regular episode, but just more of a general panel discussion talking about games adapted into movies. Because on the Hugo shortlist this time for a dramatic presentation long form, we have Dungeons & Dragons: Honor Among Thieves. Oh. We're not going to talk specifically about that. You would think maybe we would. But Colin has plans, since I've never played Dungeons & Dragons, to craft us an actual campaign so that we can more thoroughly cover Dungeons & Dragons at a later date. But this time we're just going to talk generally about games adapted into movies. And so our idea was maybe we'll just watch a bunch of movies that have been adapted from games, either board games, which there aren't many, or video games or computer games, and talk about all of that, what we like, what we want to look for in those. And so we'd love to hear from folks in the audience if you want to talk about what you would look for in a good game to movie adaptation. We do have a couple of movies that we've all watched. So those would be Doom and Clue and Battleship. So we're going to talk some about those ones, and we will also talk about some others as well. It turns out that the adaptation of games to movies is not super glorious, I think is the nice way of putting it.
There's not a lot. If we don't talk about one that you all do know about, the Wikipedia page would love your edits.
Yes, and we would love to hear your... You can give that to us, and Colin will edit the Wikipedia page.
Nice. Right. So. Tell us what we've missed.
Yes. So, all right. Kind of as I catch my breath here, I wanted to talk just a little bit briefly about like history with actual gaming of any kind from any of us. I think I know the answer, but I wanted to start with Colin. What's your history?
Oh, my family was big into card games. So, cribbage, pinochle, and that kind of transitioned to, you know, typical American board games. Checkers and chess and Monopoly and aggravation. And there when I went to college, I played Dungeons and Dragons in high school, learned hearts and bridge and spades and all the other ranked games. And
not many of those are adapted.
Not a one.
There's a spades movie?
What about video games or computer games?
I did not play a lot of video games. I played a lot of Atari 2600 games.
That's a video game.
And a bunch of stand-up console games. And then I played Doom and Quake, and then I had kids. And that was the great end of my video game
Shut
playing
that
career.
Down. Yeah.
How about you, James?
Well, I've been playing video games since a wee lad. Atari, starting Atari Joust and Pong and whatever else.
2600?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Old school. Never had a Nintendo, actually. My friend had a Nintendo, so that's where we played Mario and Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. That was always the game. Hmm. And Duck Hunt. Favorites. And then I got a PC. I played Doom and Blood and Indiana Jones and Myst.
Oh, like Secrets of Monkey Island?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. All those, late 80s, early 90s PC games. And then I got into PlayStation and been in PlayStation ever since.
Okay, so you're our video game, our console game guy.
Yeah, I could be a console game guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. My story is similar to Colin's. I grew up with all the Milton Bradley, Parker Brothers games. I think they go by a different name over here, like Monopoly and Risk. There's a different umbrella company in Europe. But yeah, those kind of games. I never really, even now, have gotten into like the European style games like Catan and those kind of things. So for me,
oh, I missed that.
For me, progress peaked with Trivial Pursuit in its various forms. I like a quiz. Speaking of which, we are going to have a quiz from Andy Perry at some point in this podcast when we stop talking.
Yeah, he makes us play Trivial Pursuit every time we get together.
I try to. Hey, Colin's wife enjoys Trivial Pursuit as well. My wife does not, so I have to pick my spots.
Yes.
And then I had a friend who had an Atari 2600, so played video games over there whenever we could. I remember playing the Indiana Jones game for the 2600, which was terrible. Mm-hmm. And that's an adaptation the other way, right? Movie to video game.
Right.
And then I had a friend who got the NES when it first came out. And most of my gaming growing up was arcade, right, where you had to spend your precious quarters And so you really needed to pick a game that you were good at. So for me, it was Galaga. But yeah, never had a game console. And so I did have a PC, but like Colin, I had one of those things where I played Wolfenstein, the original Castle Wolfenstein, that was the text. Yep. And, well, not text, but ASCII. And then I played Wolfenstein 3D in college, which was a precursor to Doom. And then I think I played Doom once or twice and then switched straight to Descent, which was a similar shooter game, but you're in a ship, so you can look up and down and twirl and all that kind of stuff. You know, try spinning. That's a good trick. And yeah, it was the same sort of thing where I played video games and then had a child and never played video games again. So
yeah, I don't got that problem.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You are the child.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right. What do you want to look for in a game or video game adaptation to film?
That's hard, because a lot of these games, they don't have plot or characters.
Correct.
Or...
Oh, that's not true.
Okay, I'm gonna call you out. What is the plot of Battleship? And who are the characters?
Sink the other ship. You are the character. You're the master and commander of your boat. Or ship.
Does that mean like, it'd be part of the movie, too?
It was part of the movie, sort of.
Okay.
I guess I was thinking more of the video games, because a lot of video games do have stories, compelling stories. True. And I usually tend to prefer video games that do have compelling stories. And once I finish the main story, there's all kinds of like side quests or trophies or things you can go collect. I typically drop all that rubbish when I'm done.
Oh, wow. So you're like...
I'll play the main story and then stop. I'm like, I'm done after that.
So we have to recognize James's shirt. It says,
"Oh, right.
I'm not procrastinating. I'm doing side quests."
Which is usually why it takes me a long time to play games.
Yes.
I think I took a year and a half to play Witcher 3 The Wild Hunt.
Yeah. I mean, wow. You know, it's worth saying that video games are another method of storytelling these days, right? I mean, games really do have that element to them, and there's a lot of artistry to it, and there's actually a video game or a computer game or interactive work category for the Hugos.
Well, in fact, there's opposite our talk tonight, which is probably why there aren't many people here. There is a video game talk. You all can't go, but...
Yes, you must all stay. And we love you very much.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point, right? Colin, what is the plot of Clue, the game, right? There was a murder in a house, and you have to find out where, right?
Yeah.
Battleship, there is a limited naval engagement where the sides can't necessarily see each other. So how do you adapt something like that to film? And my hot take is I think I would rather try and adapt one of those, because you can add as much story as you want. And then
as
I'd like
little.
To see, or as little, yes, it's true. The things that I kind of wrote down for what I want to look for, especially for one of those kind of things, is you have to have something that works for non-fans. And that goes for things with a story as well.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to have this only fit the people who played the game, right? But you also want to kind of stay in the lane a little bit. and you have to, you know, choose what way you're going to go. Are you going to go, let's take this concept and turn it into a comedy, like Clue? Right? Or take this and turn it into unintentional comedy like Battleship. Like have some Easter eggs there for people who grew up on the game, things for them to look for and go, oh, that's cool, you know, because I recognize that from the game.
You know, I did take your suggestion. And so on some of these movies and games, I wrote down in advance the things that I would like to see in them that I would, you know, consider canonical or, you know, coming from the game that would be in the movie.
All right.
So it'll be good to talk about those.
Yeah, I did a similar thing. To answer your question, the things I looked for were kind of key themes from the game, not necessarily the story per se, because for board games, right, with Colin's point, there's not a whole lot of story there.
Yeah.
You kind of make up the story along, or you just roll through the game anyway.
Yeah.
And then I look for characters or archetypes from the game that would come out in the movie. I think Dungeons & Dragons is apropos here. Where you're looking for a wizard character, a rogue character, a thief, or something, you know?
Yeah.
Something that meets the archetype of that game you're playing. And then I had a thought to your point about how adding story to the, I guess, board game, or game in general. If you're adapting something like a board game, you can just make up whatever you want, because there's no story there to be canonical to.
That's right. True. That's very true.
So it might be more
like
forgiving, right?
Like a four-page story, right?
Yeah.
Versus trying to adapt a novel.
8 o'clock right? in the morning?
Yeah. They Live, which is an 8-page short story, and 8 o'clock in the morning, which is a 105-minute movie.
Right.
8 o'clock in the morning is the story.
That's the story I want.
You got them backwards.
I got them backwards. You'll fix me in post.
So for anybody who doesn't regularly listen to the podcast, we haven't explained this meme of our podcast. There was a story called 8 o'clock in the morning that was adapted to the movie They Live. And so anytime Colin wants to say something is absolutely essential and has to be in the movie, he objected to that movie because the main character in the story, spoilers, it's four pages, dies at precisely 8 o'clock in the morning. And in the movie, he does not. And Colin could not let that go. And so that has become the rallying cry for Colin to, this is not close enough to the material. Yes. Right, yeah. So where should we start? Which one of the three films that we all watched do we want to talk about?
Let's do Battleship.
Let's do Battleship. Okay. I have to admit, right off the top, so who's seen Battleship here? Show of hands. All right. Most of the people here.
Half.
I have to admit, I really enjoyed the movie. And it's one of those, to me, it falls into the very watchably bad movie. Because, like, the production values are great. The cast is kind of incredible. Actually, it's got Liam Neeson. It does have Taylor Kitsch, and he, you know, was never as big a star as I think people thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
But it has Jesse Plemons, who's big now. Rami Malek is in it. Yeah, Rihanna. So it's all produced very well. It's Peter Berg doing his very best Skybeam, lens flare, Michael Bay impression, more or less. So it's big and loud and stupid. But the thing that I think is good about it, and so I'm gonna kind of defend the undefensible here, and talk about how the adaptation of the game is this limited naval engagement, right? Mm-hmm. It's this one area, right? Well, you start off the movie and it's the Hawaiian Islands and the Pacific Ocean and the American and Japanese fleets, right? And then the aliens land. And the first thing the aliens do is they put up this big shield that makes it so everything that's going to happen is happening inside this perimeter.
Right.
So it limits the engagement. And then night falls. And so now you have enemies that can't see each other. And that's where you get the actual gameplay part in it with the grid.
Right, because they end up using the wave detection buoys for tsunamis to say where the alien ships are, which is a technique the Japanese Navy had been using against the Americans in the war games for decades.
Yes. Okay. And so for me, like that moment in the movie, I was like, oh, that's awesome. Because it's just like, it's really like they're literally calling out grid numbers and firing, and they have a spotter watching and saying if it's a hit or a miss. So to me, it was just the perfect adaptation of Battleship.
That is one of the things that I wanted to see. Okay. I wanted to see this engagement between the aliens and the humans on a grid with shots going back and forth.
You got it.
My son Peter, who watched the movie with me, pointed out that the alien missiles look like battleship pegs.
Yes.
And they land and then they screw themselves in and they go into the ships and they explode.
Yes. Yeah. It is one of those ones where I'm like, I'm not sure how the humans win this. Because the first couple of engagements with the aliens versus the humans, it does not go at all well. And then the human characters get plot armor from there and end up winning the day. Sorry, spoilers. I do have a low tolerance for really, really bad science in a science fiction movie. And, you know, it's a science fiction podcast, and Battleship, for some reason, is a science fiction film. Did not need to be.
Aliens.
Aliens, right. Yeah,
aliens. Naturally.
And this one has, like, the worst science of almost any movie ever made, right? It's got the stupid sky beam where they're trying to communicate with a distant planet, which somehow turns into 6 years and the aliens show up.
I think this is the inspiration for the J.J. Abrams weapons from the later Star Wars trilogy.
That could be. My headcanon is that the aliens were on Pluto the whole time. And that explains why they're so sensitive to light, because they're from a dim place. So that's the way I justify it.
I did find the lobbing bombs to be rather archaic for an interstellar civilization.
I suppose, yeah.
Well, but parabolic motion is pretty universal.
Yeah, they can just do lasers. Pff, done.
Well, then the movie can't happen. So.
Yes. Plot armor, right. Yeah. I forgot plot armor.
Yeah, exactly. There was one other
Blasters,
thing.
Blasters, I don't know, something.
Yeah, oh, and this movie also has my favorite thing that means... TV Tropes has a category called art major physics, where it's somebody wrote this and they didn't run it by a scientific advisor. And it happens in so many movies where somebody says, that metal, it isn't on the periodic table. And I'm the son of a chemist and everything in the universe is on the periodic table. You know, somebody needs to tell you that.
Until they find something.
Whether we know it or not. Whether we know it or not.
Yeah, we just don't know it.
Yeah, but you could very easily correct that mistake by just saying, this is an unknown alloy. Right? Or do like Andy Weir did in Project Hail Mary and say, it seems to be xenon, but xenon's a gas and this is a solid. That's cool. You don't have to go to the, it's not on the periodic table. It's dumb and I will never let it go.
Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Anybody here want to say anything about Battleship? We do have two mics up here.
Dreadful. It's absolutely dreadful. And Liam, the fact that Liam Neeson is in it makes it even worse. Makes it worse that it's so bad, and he's a decent actor. And just speaking from my own ethnic point of view, his citizenship has been revoked since he started.
All right, he's dead to you. Dead to How about you, Andy?
The thing I noticed that, well, I didn't notice that, but someone had told me that Rihanna never loses her cap throughout the entire film, and she gets dunked in water, swimming underwater all the time, and she always pops up and she's perfectly wearing this cap. And I watched the whole film obsessed by watching her and her hat.
All right, well.
Just like the rest of the film was just washed over me.
You got to do what you got to do.
It's a good way to watch the film.
Anybody else? Well, I think I've proved my point.
So that was
Battleship, greatest movie ever made.
Rotten Tomatoes score of 34%.
Oh, boy.
Like I said, what's the audience score?
I didn't look.
Okay.
If you look at the Wikipedia numbers, it says they made $100 million mm-hmm. between the cost of the movie and box office. But in the article itself, it mentions that Universal lost $150 million on that movie.
Ouch. Well, I'm going to say then it definitely falls into underrated gem. So, yes. All right. Moving on to another movie. Perhaps Doom.
We can talk about Doom.
I have to admit, I did not rewatch Doom. I watched it in the theater with my brother-in-law. Ed and I have a terrible habit of going to really bad movies together. We saw the Super Mario Brothers movie, the first one, together. So we learned our lesson at some point. We stopped going to movies together. Mostly because I moved out of state. But yeah. Doom, what about it? Did you see it back in the day, or is it a fresh watch for you?
Yeah, it's a fresh watch.
Okay.
Yeah, so I used to go to, and I'd haul my entire computer and monitor over to a friend's house, and we would network and play Doom together. The Doom movie that we're going to talk about is actually an adaptation of Doom 3, because it's set on Mars.
Right.
Nice. What was I expecting? I wanted a rocket jump. I really wanted a rocket jump. I never learned how to rocket jump. And at some point, I wanted a first-person shooting perspective. Right. Just because that's what the entire game is, right? You are the person doing the shooting.
And you get that. And you actually do get that in the movie.
Yeah.
You get it, and it's fantastic.
Yes.
So this movie has Rosamund Pike and Carl Urban and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Well, he was still going by The Rock, I believe.
Yeah. He was fresh off WWE.
Yeah. So another kind of good cast for a, I don't know, not very good movie, but
fantastically
what do you think of
watchable
it?
Movie.
I'm pretty forgiving of science in a lot of times, and bad science. The whole genetic editing thing and inserting chromosomes and...
So would you rather it have been the, like, the Doom 1 supernatural demons and that kind of stuff?
Yes, which I think they did in the second movie, and I don't know if it was any more successful or not.
I couldn't tell that it was successful. I looked up the ratings on it, and I'm like, I don't recognize...
It was a direct-to-DVD movie.
Yeah, so, I didn't recognize any of the actors.
That definitely tells you something.
I think it was shot in Romania or something. And,
right.
So when I saw this with my brother-in-law, right at the beginning, there's an elevator that closes on someone's arm and cuts his arm off.
Right.
And I thought, I'm not sure that I'm ready for this movie. Because at that time, I did not watch anything vaguely even trending towards horror.
Had you played Doom by then?
Once or twice.
And so you kind of knew what to expect, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a horror video game.
It is.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see the BFG. So.
Oh, right. Yes.
The BFG was pretty fantastic. Cool.
It's in there for 4 seconds. And
a little longer than four, but it's not used nearly enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what she said.
Oh, boy. And anything else to say about Doom?
It lost money, and it doesn't rank well on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Oh, man. That's too bad.
Which is interesting, because there was actually some story that they could have developed and plotted out, and there was... Some of the relational stuff between Carl Urban and Rosamund Pike is, you know, estranged brother and sister coming back together.
You love a redemption story.
I do love a redemption story.
We've tried to trademark that. All right, you want to talk about Clue?
Yeah, let's talk about something funny.
Clue is not science fiction. Well, no, that's not true, because with the multiple endings, it clearly subscribes
multiverse.
To the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. So, yes, definitely science fiction. Yeah. It's another thing where, like, there isn't much story to it. How many folks here have seen Clue? Really? Luke, no Clue?
I mean, I played Clue.
Hmm? Here in the Europe, it was called Cluedo.
Cluedo. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, right, one of those international marketing things where they say, well, Americans, in fact, the character names are different over here.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then there was a character renaming in the 2000s or 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah. But this is sort of the good example of taking something with no story And I mean, it really changes the story quite a bit, because in the game, there's a single murder by one person, right, and you're trying to solve it. Where in this one, there's quite a number of murders, and everybody's trying to solve them or commit a murder.
Right.
Or both.
But it has an absolutely standout performance from Tim Curry. Madeline Kahn is incredible in it.
Oh, gosh. Eileen Brennan.
Yeah.
I think they're all pretty good.
And they leaned into the comedy, and I feel like it's smart comedy as well. It's insanely quotable. We'll often, like, if you walk into a dark room, I'll say, like Wadsworth does, if there's anybody in here, just look out. And all the lines from, I mean, all the Madeline Kahn lines, right? How many husbands have you had? Mine or other women's? Just yours. Five. Five? Yes, just the five. My sister and I can go back and forth with all the movie lines.
Which sister is this?
Megan.
Yeah. So if I try this on Katie, she's going to look at me weird.
It might not work.
Maybe.
Although, you know, with Clue, she would probably know, just because that's one of those ones where I hadn't seen it until I was in college, and Megan was obsessed with it. And so watch it on VHS, as all proper movies are watched. we've found for the podcast that there are some movies that, especially science fiction movies, that are best watched on VHS, because if you upscale them, they don't work very well.
Yeah.
Because the effects were meant to go on pan and scan television, you know, TV movie kind of stuff. I watched it over and over. And my sister got a big smile out of the fact that my son does a movie night with his friends, and they'll pick something from any era. And just one of them would be like, hey, let's watch this. And they chose Clue. And I was like, you know, sometimes there's a movie like when we watched The Last Starfighter, and our boys didn't like it. And they were the right age to like it if it had been 1984. But it was not 1984. It was 2004. 2014. And he and his friends absolutely loved it. And so I thought, okay, that is validation, the kind of validation that warms a parent's heart. You've raised them right.
Yeah. Well, it's an absolutely hilarious movie. Mm-hmm. And it knows when to take itself seriously, which is almost never, and when to make a joke out of almost anything, which is pretty much all the time.
Yes.
And, you know, from a canonical standpoint, mm-hmm, I wanted people with the proper character names, and I wanted all of the weapons to be there. And I was quite happy with both of those, and that all the weapons were used.
Yes.
Right.
And Mr. Body was actually a speaking character instead of just the corpse.
Yeah. I do like the way they use that, Mr. Body, yeah.
Yes. Yes. I like the... And what exactly do you do here? I'm the butler. Well, what do you do? I butler, sir. Yes. All right. I do want to open it up to anybody who wants to talk about games, or we can start talking about other video game, board game adaptations that we watched. James watched a whole bunch of movies for some reason. Kevin... Oh, Lori.
I have a question.
Okay.
So you said you see bad movies with your brother-in-law.
Yeah.
But you went on to refer to the Super Mario Brothers movie. So what's a bad movie that you saw with him? Surely you didn't mean that one.
Now, which Super Mario Brothers are you referring to?
The one with John Leguizamo.
Okay. All right.
That's the one you're referring to.
Okay. So I will explain. Super Mario Brothers has some form of backstory in it, right? It has a story. It's a quest, right? And the movie makes some interesting choices with the story that it presents, and it's so bonkers. The whole dinosaur parallel universe thing is very odd. But this is something that you appreciate.
Yeah, Kevin and I watched it pretty recently, and I really liked it. I liked how weird it was.
Okay.
I mean, it's just unspeakably silly, which is what I liked about it. I guess that's a matter of taste.
All right.
I just had to confirm I heard you correctly.
You did hear me correctly. Yes. We can still be friends.
We can.
To be fair, like, this is not a movie that I've seen since, I don't know, whenever it came out, 1993, something like that. You know, I was in my 20s. I was young.
I have a question that is actually relayed from Mr. Juan San Miguel, who could not make it.
Oh.
His question was, I think...
Kevin is delivering it because I felt that it might sound confrontational.
He said, when you're playing a game, do you ever ask, or do you ever think to yourself, this needs to be a movie? And I think what he means by, like, you know, I know The Last of Us TV series is supposed to be excellent, but I feel like I already played that game. And because, like, I was playing it, I had, like, such an emotional response to the story that I've already seen. It's like, why do I need to see that story again acted out?
I mean, it's a similar question to, and I'll let you guys answer. I won't just completely monologue.
Yeah.
It's a similar question to, like, you know, why does this book need to be a movie, right? There's plenty of, I think it's much easier for us to look at a book and go, oh, I'd love to see this brought to life, right? Where in a video game, it's already brought to life. It's visual, you know, you are interacting with it in your own particular way. I will say The Last of Us, I've never played the game, but I thought the series was excellent. So.
We've kind of wrestled with this in the past where we've discussed talking more about other types of adaptations other than books and or written works in general, right? Mm-hmm. When we've talked about, you know, graphic novels, for instance, right. Well, video games, even though we're doing it now. And the pushback, especially from you, has always been that it's already visual in a graphic novel setting kind of thing.
Yeah.
So why would I want to see what they do to visualize that in a film? Which it's a fair point, I suppose, but I'm not sure how to answer that question now. Think about it.
Yeah.
Because it has already been visualized.
Well, you've played more games than Colin and I have. Like, right. I will say, I think Descent could make an excellent movie just because, it's in space. It's a science fiction thing.
Well, for me, I think it's the other way around, where playing the video game is like you're actually in the movie, but you're the main character of the movie doing all the kick-ass things.
Right. So is that what you're kind of saying, Kevin, is that pulls you out of it, right? Now you're watching somebody else play a different version of it, almost. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like watching somebody play a video game. Although it's hugely popular now.
It is popular, yeah. Twitch exists.
Yep.
Yeah. I've got two answers. The cynical one is, they know it'll make money.
Sure.
Right, there are people that love the property, and because it has that name on it, they're going to watch it.
Yeah.
The other one is a lot less cynical, and that is, in these games, there are lots of cutscenes, and that's where character development happens, right? Mm-hmm. It's not an action. It's not a puzzle. It's where you learn about the relationships, the backstories, all the other things that kind of give the game body and feel. A television series is all body and feel. So it's more of that. And so if you know people connected to that, then, you know, yes, you're going to make money, but maybe you can make something of value while you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or get them to buy more games later, one or the other.
Yes, yeah. And get them to make in-app purchases.
Yes.
Angry Birds was turned into a movie. But
they missed an opportunity. They should have had a poll saying, okay, the people are in the writer's room right now, and if you want this character to die, call this number and be charged 50 cents.
Interactive.
If you want the other character to die.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that what Juan's getting at is there are times where you're playing something and you're like, I would love to see this on a larger scale, right? Because video game graphics are getting amazing.
Yeah.
But it's still on a small screen, right? You're not normally, you're not playing that in a theater, right? And so to see that kind of that.
I played PlayStation games on an 80 inch TV before. 80 inch screen.
Right. So. Yeah. You're sitting 3 inches away from it, like your mom told you not to.
Pretty much.
Yeah. No, we grew up in the era where TVs would actually cook your brains if you were too close. No, they wouldn't. But that is what our mothers would tell us.
Yes.
Luke.
Luke Elliott from the Ink to Film podcast. I came all the way to Glasgow just so I could crash this podcast recording. It's funny. Both of you have talked about the properties I was going to bring up. The Super Mario Brothers original film, I also have a ton of fondness for. We covered it on our podcast recently, and my co-host had never seen it, whereas I grew up with it. It was like my very early age formative memory watching a movie like that. And when I rewatched it, I was delighted by how weird it was, how dark it was at times, how it just didn't play by any of the rules that modern films seem to do these days when adapting video games. I was very charmed by it. While I recognized its flaws, he was less charmed. So I think there is a bit of nostalgia that can happen that can color our appreciation for these kind of things. And then The Last of Us, I think, should absolutely be discussed when we're talking about prestige dramas that have been made from video games that are like being nominated for Emmys. Craig Mazin, who did the fantastic Chernobyl series, was one of the co-creators of The Last of Us on HBO, and it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm a mega fan of the video games. Probably some of my favorite games I've ever played. The first one especially just blew me away. And when it got announced, I was skeptical, but when I heard Craig Mazin after I saw Chernobyl especially, I was very excited. And I thought they totally delivered on that. I'm someone who likes to see it cross mediums. I like to see, an adaptation of even something that I do love, because I can keep them separate, I guess. I don't let one taint the other for me.
I mean, can you show me what ribbon's hanging off your badge?
Oh, yeah. I do have a What's Better ribbon, which, yeah, it's a very fun conversation starter at a con like this, I've found. If anybody wants one, just let me know. But, yeah, just, those are my two cents, I guess, on video game adaptations.
Great. Thanks for being here, Luke. I appreciate it. It turns out Luke is from just down the road from us, so we'll have to get together, actually, maybe in the United States sometime. But if you like our normal podcasts for Take Me to Your Reader, I highly recommend listening to Ink to Film because they do what we do, only better. Because
you're the one up for the award.
Not for this podcast, though. And yeah, because Luke is an actual writer, and then James, his co-host, is an actual filmmaker. And so they approach things from not quite as much just a fan perspective, but you guys also do bring the kind of fanishness to it when it's something
that you really enjoy. Sure, because we're both fans as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I, for the record, I have heard you say that you preferred the movie, so...
There are times. There are times.
Yeah. And there are times that Colin says that as well. And there's times I prefer the book. James, you watched a whole bunch of movies, didn't you?
Oh, gosh, I did.
Yes. Just give us the list.
Let's see. Assassin's Creed, Dungeons & Dragons, Battleship Doom, Mortal Kombat, Exploding Kittens.
Which Mortal Kombat?
The new one, actually.
The new
2023,
one.
I believe.
Okay. I love the original one, actually. So,
it's but I've seen those cheesy. Before, too. Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah.
Then Pokemon, Clue, and Resident Evil.
Nice.
Pokemon.
I actually recently watched the Hitman Agent 47 movie, which was terrible. The interesting thing was there were I played those games, and the original Hitman Agent 47, or Codename 40, game was really hard. And the Silent Assassin, the second game, was the gameplay was fixed. So it was a little easier to do. But the first movie that came out, the one with Timothy Oliphant in it, completely jettisoned all the backstory to it. And so it made a decent movie, but it's one of those ones where it's like, iRobot. It's a fine movie as long as you don't think of it as an adaptation of iRobot.
Right.
Whereas the new movie kept more of the backstory, but it was a mess and it wasn't very good. I will say, though, that like the first 20 minutes of it reminded me of the times when I'd be playing Hitman, especially Hitman 2 Silent Assassin, because what you want to do in that game is get to the end of the level and have nobody has ever noticed that you were there. Yeah. You completed your mission and you got out and you get rated Silent Assassin. Sometimes you just... you do one thing wrong and somebody sees you and then you just go, screw it, I'm greasing everybody. And there were ways to do that, to just basically wipe out every non-player character on the game board without ever actually raising the alarm. You could still get Silent Assassin, but you had to do it very carefully. But
that's what I usually do with Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
I don't have to wipe out the whole board, but gosh, it's fun.
It can be fun, yeah. Did you ever play Half-Life?
Yes.
There were blogs, I guess. It was before blogs. It was web pages dedicated to pointing out where there are scientists that you could kill with no consequences. and there was evidently a secret room with 300 scientists in it that you could just throw a grenade in. Because people are gross. America! one movie that I have seen that I think maybe I played the demo for Prince of Persia.
Oh,
the movie starring noted Persian Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
not really very good, but it was kind of entertaining.
I watched Ouija. Actually, there have been a lot of movies involving Ouija boards. The original Exorcist, Reagan first goes into the occult by using a Ouija board. And so there have been Ouija movies really for the last 50 years. I chose to watch the one made by Mike Flanagan, which is a sequel to an earlier movie. And it's really well done.
Mike Flanagan?
House of Usher
and Midnight Mass?
House of Bly Manor, yeah.
Nice. Haunting of Hill House and all those are excellent.
Yes,
and
excellent.
For the record, I have gotten more comfortable with horror and I've watched all those series except Bly Manor and they're all very good.
Bly Manor will turn your screw.
Yeah. I understood that reference.
I did find one other movie that's based around a game where the plot is everyone is playing a board game, ostensibly, but there's an actual game in the movie halfway based on the board game.
Oh.
It's Robert Altman's 1979 post-apocalyptic movie called Quintet.
Okay.
And if you dig around on the internet hard enough, you can find the actual Quintet rules and a scan of the board that was released the same day that the movie was released. Unfortunately, that's due cool. to copyright laws, you can't actually make the board using the scan or use all the rules because they're really simple. But
so going back to what you said about the exorcists, it's sort of based on a true story, right? An actual case?
Yeah.
And that is the reason that I never did anything with Ouija boards, because growing up in the evangelical church, I was told that playing with a Ouija board is a way to get yourself some demons.
Oh boy.
And another way would be, of course, listening to heavy metal, reading Stephen King, or playing Dungeons and Dragons. So I have now read, what, two or three Stephen King novels, and I do listen to metal sometimes. But still no Ouija boards. It's one of those things where I'm like, I'm not sure what's on the other side of that. I'm just not going to mess with it. So, yeah, I think we're about wrapped here, unless anybody has any other questions or if everybody's ready to get to a quiz. Damo, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just wondering, was anyone else very disturbed by the way Seth so casually said, greased? That's
my one last comment. Is that a term that doesn't cross over to Ireland?
That's just the way you used it.
Right. I could have said smoked, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Whooped.
Yes.
Whacked.
Yes. We have. I think we've told this story on the podcast. I don't know, when my son and I used to play the Lego game, the Lego Star Wars game, when it first came out, there was just a playable demo. And we were playing it, and we were playing on the computer there, and he's shooting the little lasers, you know, which aren't real lasers. You're shooting at toys, and he's like, kill those, kill those, kill those. And my wife objected and said, hey, you're not killing anybody. Those are just toys. And so then Ethan, my son, started saying, all right, whoop them, Daddy, whoop them. Because we played a game called Whoop where we just beat the crap out of each other with pillows. And so knocking things apart was called whooping them. To the point where somebody asked, what does it mean, like for the boxcar children in those books to be orphans? And he said, because their parents got whooped. and then there was one time that he had created with Legos the Luke Skywalker skiff scene from Return of the Jedi where he gets his lightsaber and starts, you know, hacking away at the bad guys.
Starts whooping bad guys.
Yes. And so he said he's going to jump here, and then R2's going to shoot him his lightsaber, and then he's going to whoop that guy's axe. Because all the bad guys had fireman axes from Legos. And he said, and then he's going to whoop his axe, and he's going to whoop his axe, and he's going to whoop all their axes. And my wife came running down the hallway going, what did Ethan just say? So, yeah. It's an axe whooping. All right, Andy, are you ready to administer a quiz?
I am ready.
Ready to whoop
I'm guessing just shout out the answers. I'm not keeping score or...
All right.
Yeah, so we're just... So I've done themed rounds for every round, and we're going to start with music and lyrics in films.
Okay,
or one like second. Startings okay. Or TV programs.
So don't blurt. Let us all see if we can think of the answer, and then we'll go.
Okay.
Okay, so number one. So I'm going to not sing the lyrics. I'm just going to speak the lyrics.
Bless you.
Yeah, you don't want to hear me sing. I'd like to lie shipwrecked and comatose, drinking fresh mango juice.
I got nothing.
Mango.
It's a British TV series.
Oh, I mean, I can guess, but can we phone a friend? We'll see if somebody in the room knows.
Well, British science fiction series: Doctor Who, Red Dwarf.
I just said Doctor Who. Doctor
Who. I was going to guess space.
But I'm probably not.
I'm going to say Red Dwarf.
Yes. Yes, Colin gets the point.
Red Dwarf.
All right.
Point Colin.
So a lot of these questions are for my favorite TV shows.
And oh, all right.
So, okay, number two. But yo, we ain't no government list. We straight don't exist. No names, no fingerprints. Just something strange. Watch your back. Because we never quite know. I'm going to stop there otherwise.
I know this one.
I know this one.
You got this one?
No, I'm going to rely on you guys.
Here come the men in black.
Yes, it's men in black. Yeah,
I was figuring it was men. I would have been my guess, men in black. Yeah.
Okay, number three.
I had that one, by the way, after Street Don't Exist. So.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are not that of imagination.
The Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone.
Yeah, the Twilight Zone.
Do not adjust your screen.
Number four.
I don't think of that as lyrics. But
no, it's kind of the opening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's music.
Very few lyrics. There is music
there's
in the
music
background
there, though.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, there, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, Leonard Cohen's not a singer either. There's something strange in your neighborhood.
Ghostbusters.
The original.
Yeah. There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling the transmission.
Yes. Go ahead, James. The Outer Limits.
No, we
Sorry.
You win.
The next round. The next round is quotes.
Okay.
This is from films, books, and TV series, and they're all from non-British and non-American authors.
Oh crap!
Oh boy!
So there's a bonus point if you can give the country of origin of the author.
Okay.
Because this is.
See, this is where Andy is leaning into his sci-fi around the world.
Yeah, you know.
Bona fides.
If I can't plug my own podcast, then I'm not doing the quiz. Okay. Number one, take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Planet of the Apes.
Come on, shout it out, James.
Pierre Boulle. Planet of the Apes. There we go.
Yes, so Planet of the Apes, and yes, Pierre Boulle from France.
France, yes.
Right.
Bonus points. We only need to send a brain.
Only need to send a brain.
Why does that sound familiar?
Phone a friend?
Is that not American?
Yes, three by the problem.
Ah, yes.
And obviously bonus points for the China.
Yep. Yes.
That's one for the audience.
I knew that part.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice. Yes.
A robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm.
Asimov, born in France. Or born in Russia.
Yes. But does anyone know the book that it's...
I mean, I would guess iRobot.
iRobot?
No.
Nope.
It was from Runaround.
Oh, Runaround. Yeah, it's one of the stories.
One of the original stories got fixed up into...
Yeah,
the film.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, technically, that's from Mercury. So that story is set on Mercury.
I bow to you. Super knowledge.
Well, no, Mercury was where it was set.
Set on Mercury.
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yep.
We don't need worlds. We need a mirror. We struggle to make contact, but we never achieve it. We are in a ridiculous predicament of man pursuing a goal that he fears and does not really need. Man needs man.
Oh, this one. I know this one, but I'm not going to come up with it.
Nope. Phone a friend.
We got nothing. Luke's got us covered.
Is this Solaris?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
All right, dang.
I just read that book, dude. Dang it.
Before the next Worldcon.
Yeah,
that's Solaris and Poland.
Yes.
Number five.
That's the very end of the book, isn't it?
It's towards the end.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say they don't look like that. That's what they look like, right? They look like prawns.
District 9,
yes. South Africa.
In South Africa, yeah. It's so hard not to try and do the accent.
Never stopped me, so.
Round three, geography. Yeah. Name the city for the setting of the 1968 film starring Charlton Heston based on Pierre Boulle's La Planète du Sang.
The city?
The city that it is set in.
This is in New York City?
Yeah, New York City. Yeah. You see, they don't want to spoil it for everybody, but... The ending spoils it for everybody.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah, I suppose
New York
it does.
City. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to think of the name of the ape city.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, it's New York, it's still.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think the apes called that city.
Oh, in the movie, yes. In the book, they're on Soror.
Yeah.
Different planet.
Yeah. This enigmatic character, originally in a series of books, inspired many films, TV series, and they're even their own iconic fashion, lived at 22B Baker Street.
Yes. Sherlock Holmes.
Skull Island is the traditional home to which beast spawned many films and video games?
Which one is?
Skull Island.
It's got to be Kong,
Skull
right?
Island, yep, Kong. Yeah. King Kong.
King Kong.
Donkey Kong, obviously.
It's his cousin.
What is the name of the seafaring turtle who carries Discworld upon his back, mentioned in the series of books by Terry Pratchett?
I've only read one of those.
I just started reading
The Color of Magic?
The one with the golem in it. I want to say it's Maturin?
Arturin.
Arturin.
The great Arturin.
Maturin is from Stephen King.
Ah.
Okay, we're going to move on to food and drink now.
Oh boy. Lori's my lifeline for this one. Food and drink.
All right.
Fantastic food.
What drink is described... as like having your brain smashed out by a slice of lemon wrapped around a large gold brick in the movie, radio series, and book Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
What now?
You have the shirt.
I know. I can't think. I'm blanking on the name, though.
It's
Gargle Blaster.
Pangalactic.
Pangalactic Garden Blaster.
When we covered that for the podcast, James did his best approximation of the Pangalactic.
I tried to make them as best I could based off the description in the book. Yep. It was fantastic.
Yeah. It's hard to find those ingredients here.
It true. I did a lot of substitutions. Yeah. Terran substitutions.
What is Dr. Mark Watney's primary diet in this highly rated adapted movie based on a book by Andy Weir?
I know this. It's Vicodin.
Taters, precious.
Taters, yes.
Yes.
What meat, legume, and beverage is consumed by the leading character in the iconic movie adapted from a Thomas Harris crime thriller novel?
Can you repeat that?
What meat, legume, and beverage is consumed by the leading character in this iconic movie adapted from a Thomas Harris crime thriller novel?
I do have
novel.
It now, yes. I believe it's liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Oh,
perfect.
Yes, okay.
What creature in the 1984 film loosely based on Roald Dahl's first published book of the same name should not be fed after midnight?
This is adapted? Really?
How did we miss this?
This is terrible. This is a terrible oversight.
I'm ashamed.
What are they called, though?
Gremlins.
No. There's Mogwai. There's another name. Is it Mogwai?
Mogwai, yes.
Mogwai, okay. Yeah. That's adapted?
No, it's loosely. There's Roald Dahl wrote.
We've done loosely before.
Okay.
But it's pretty loose. Yeah.
No, we've done loose stuff.
Yeah, we've done loose. Yeah.
We did board games one time. Is that podcast rule number two?
We did Eagle Eye because there was supposedly some connection to an Asimov story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
There was not. And we did iRobot, so...
In the popular English book series by Enid Blyton and movie, The Famous Five, the characters enjoyed lashings of which item from their picnic basket?
Lashings.
It's quite an English one, this one.
Yeah, I was going to say... Pass.
Picnic basket contents that you could get lashed by.
Corn husks. Oh, did he say it? Did I ever reveal
that? He's got it.
I think it's ginger beer.
It is not ginger beer. Oh. That's like a common phrase, like lashings of ginger beer, but it's actually, in the books, it's boiled eggs.
Oh.
Yeah. You enjoy lashing boiled eggs.
All right, Andy, you're going to have to explain how one lashes someone with a boiled egg.
Lashing is just to eat quickly and gluttonously.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's nothing to do with whipping.
This is a two nations divided by a common language kind of thing, because for us, lashing means whipping.
Whap.
Yeah. Okay.
It does in this country.
Yeah.
Sorry, to bring three nations into this, lashings in Dublin, or lashings, should I say, means lots of. So if you're going out to have lashings of boiled eggs, it would be probably very bad for you. And you would stink for a while afterwards.
You'd have lashes of beer and get your ass whooped.
Just a couple minutes left.
So, do you want to carry on?
Yeah, do a couple more. Cool. And then we'll wrap up in 2 minutes.
Do you want me to do... So this round is connections. So I'm going to give you... I'm going to name four things, and then you've got to make the connection of those four things. So if I did Picard, Kirk, Pike, and Archer...
The captains of the...
And Star Trek captains.
Starship. Yeah. Enterprise.
Yeah.
So, Fleabit and Furball, Walking Carpet, Overgrown Mophead, Fuzzball. What connects those four things?
Chewbacca.
Chewbacca.
Those are nicknames from Chewbacca from Han Solo.
Yes. Insults, Insults thrown at Chewbacca.
Yep.
LaForge, Pygar, Matt Murdock, Toph Briefing.
Matt Murdock.
Daredevil.
Oh, they're all superheroes in Marvel.
I'll repeat it. LaForge, Pygar, Matt Murdock, Toph Briefing.
Maybe not.
Matt Murdock. I mean, Matt Murdock is Daredevil.
Yeah.
And he's a lawyer.
A Murdock is.
Okay.
They're all blind.
Oh, that is the other pertinent.
Okay.
We're too ableist, I guess, to get that. So. Were you aware of the other characters?
No, but LaForge and Matt Murdock.
LaForge.
2 out of 4.
Geordi LaForge.
Oh, right.
For some reason, I was thinking that was a... never mind.
Forge from X-Men. Never mind. I missed the lap part.
Creator, a Rottweiler, Executive Officer Kane, and a Predator. What do those four things have in common?
Executive.
And as a clue, they're in chronological order as well.
Okay, can you give us the four again?
It's Creator, Rottweiler, Executive Officer Kane, Predator.
Executive. Are they hunters?
Give us a hint.
Predators.
You already did give us one, but...
It's all based on one movie franchise. Yes. Someone said Alien.
Kane. Yes.
By facehuggers.
Yeah. All right.
We got the stop.
Yeah, we got the stop sign. So thank you so much, everybody, for coming.
Yeah, thank you. Give us a blessing.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I always give a blessing at the end of this, modeled on the Irish blessing. I should, actually pass Demo the...
normally you say, may the road rise virtue. And in Gaelic, which I suppose are in Scotland, so it applies here as well, that's said as Gnoiri an Bohorlat.
Nice.
And to elaborate on that, the verb Eirig means to develop and to grow and to enhance, stuff like that.
Okay.
And Bohor is, well, like any other language, a metaphor for your life and your pathway and so forth.
Nice.
But also just means road.
Perfect. I usually say, may the road rise up to meet you, and may the book always fall open to where you left off. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Normally we have a little bit more structure.
Sometimes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You can't fool them. They listen to us.
That's true. They are some who listen, so...